Good morning.
Good morning.
I would like to leave you with some exhortation this morning, something that I've had some experience with, have been greatly blessed by. I trust that you'll find a blessing in it as well. Invite your attention to Hebrews chapter 12 this morning. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Notice in this first verse, there's a race that is set before us, each of us, that we're called to run. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. You see there, Jesus is the source of our faith. He's the one from which it originates. You see the example that He left for us? He gave proper consideration to the joy that was set before Him. And by so doing, He could despise the shame or the reproach that came to Him as He ran the race that was set before Him. He did not focus on the shame part or the reproach part, but He was looking at the end of His race, the joy that was awaiting Him. For consider Him that endured such contradiction of sinners against Himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. The race that you and I have been called to is such a race that we can make it. If we don't make it, it's because we have grown weary and fainted in our minds, not in the abilities.
Right.
But rather, the mind became faint, became overwhelmed, became depressed, and so it caused us to quit striving. Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children, my son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of Him. For whom the Lord loveth, He chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom He receiveth. That sounds pretty aggressive there, doesn't it? Not only chastening, but also a more business-like approach, scourging. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh, which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? You notice the proper response there? Our fathers corrected us. In other words, we were somewhat out of line. They corrected us. And did we walk around with a bad attitude? No. It says we gave them reverence. Proper response is reverence. Realizing that, you know, they are doing this to help us. For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, according to what they understood. But He for our profit, that we might be partakers of His holiness. Okay, so this chastening is that we might be partakers of His holiness. So how do we know if it's God chastening us or if it's the devil attacking us? What difference does it make?
None.
We think of Job. There we have insight. It was the devil, okay? God allowed it. So, basically, it was something that came into his life. It was, you could call it evil because it seemed like it was a harmful situation. But he was able to be a partaker of God's holiness in the situation. In other words, a proper response to any trial is allowing you to be a partaker of God's holiness because God's holiness is working in you and through you. So whether it's the devil, whether it's God, it should not be our biggest concern. Our biggest concern would be, what is holiness in this situation? How can I put that into effect? But God's chastening is because of His love of holiness. He wants to see more of it. Now, no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Do we focus on the chastening, the pain of the moment, or do we focus on what He is trying to produce? Wherefore, lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees. In other words, don't get so weary. And make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. If we become bitter as God chastens us, that we might be partakers of His holiness, if we become bitter during that process, we'll be defiled, and it could lead to our being turned out of the way. Lest there be any fornicator or profane person, as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. So, let's take a look at Esau. How was he a fornicator? How was he a profane person? Esau was a descendant of Abraham. Seems like Esau was in line for all the blessings of the house of Abraham. He was in line to be the one through whom the Messiah would come for the creation of a nation of God's chosen people. He lightly esteemed that privilege. And so we can understand the profane person part of it. He was profane in that he held as common or not of great value that which God valued highly. He was a fornicator in the sense that he was not trustworthy. He was not... it fits very well with profane person. It kind of goes together. But he had a light view of what God viewed as sacred. Now let's go back to Genesis 25 and see if we can gain a little more insight into what Esau's situation was. In Genesis 25, we'll start at verse 27. And the boys, Jacob and Esau, grew, And Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he didn't eat of his venison. This venison is later referred to as savory meat. I think it gives you an idea of why Isaac liked it so much. But Rebekah loved Jacob. Okay, you have a Esau. A picture is being more of a thrill-seeking person. He loves the excitement of the hunt. He loved it so much he became good at it. He wasn't so much the one for the daily caring for the flocks and the herds like Jacob was. Esau liked his savory meat pretty good, which is understandable. But I think it says something about him. Jacob was willing to serve day in and day out, rain or shine, frost or heat, as is manifest later with Laban. He's willing to eat pottage. Jacob sought pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. So why was Esau faint? I think he had an unsuccessful hunt. He likely had taken the nothing. And with him being a cunning hunter, I expect he tried about everything he knew to try and be successful rather than come home empty-handed. And so I think he was very well spent by the time he came back. And Esau said to Jacob, "Feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint." Therefore was his name called Edom. And Jacob said, "Sell me this day thy birthright." Esau said, "Behold, I am at the point to die. And what profit shall this birthright do to me?" And Jacob said, "Swear to me this day." And he swore unto him, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink, and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Can you blame the man? God certainly does. Was Esau at the point to die? Esau, it says, was a cunning hunter and a man of the field. Was he totally ignorant of all the things you can eat from out in the field? Was there nothing available out in the field for him to eat? Did he actually come home just barely dragging along and he's just going to collapse on Jacob's doorstep and be dead? Did Esau go hunting with his heart set on savory meat? After all, that's the normal result of a hunt. And it wasn't working out. Did God keep the critters away or did the devil? Reasonably speaking, he should have been successful. If anybody could get it, Esau could. He comes home empty. And the more he thinks about that savory meat, the more faint he becomes because of the great disappointment. We're prone to that too. We get used to things going along well, and we kind of expect it. And then sometime we do the same thing, maybe, like we've done before, and it don't work. Things are not going well. I'm very disappointed. Then Esau comes past where Jacob is. He's out there cooking some pottage. And the more he gets to thinking about that pottage, the more sure he is that he's just about ready to die. Isn't that how we do it too? The more we think about the troubles that we're having, the more we think about what all is going wrong, the more discouraged we become. Because it's like, there's no hope. This is leading to my destruction. Esau had this feeling of, I'm suffering today. I must have relief now. This birthright, when does that come into play? How does that affect today? My today can be helped by giving Jacob my birthright that doesn't affect today? The more he thought about it, that he was had to have some pottage, the more it seemed like he had to have it. A wrong focus, a focus on how I feel today, led him to lightly esteem his sacred birthright. It seems like his birthright was closely connected with God's plan of salvation. The creation of a nation to bring the Messiah into the world. But Esau was, would you say he was kind of set up here? He normally would have a successful hunt. Today he did not. He wore himself out. And of all the days, Jacob just happens to be cooking pottage today. And Esau comes right past him. What a setup. Did Esau realize what was at stake that day? Let's go back to Hebrews. For ye know how that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. I don't know how much difference there is between the birthright and the blessing, but it seemed like he had thought that they could be separated in some way. And there came a day when his tears, his crying, could not in the slightest change the verdict. It had already been transferred to Jacob, and nothing he could do at that point would change that. For ye are not come unto the mount that might be touched and that burned with fire, nor unto blackness and darkness and tempest. These are some of the verses why I think the birthright refers a lot to his privilege of being the head of the nation or the blessing of that God gave to Abraham as being the source of blessing to all nations of the earth and all families of the earth and such. Because now here it contrasts the kingdom that he was receiving or should have received with an eternal kingdom. And the sound of a trumpet and the voice of words, which voice they that heard entreated that the word should not be spoken to them anymore. for they could not endure that which was commanded. And if so much as a beast touched the mountain, it shall be stoned or thrust through with a dart. And so terrible was the sight that Moses said, I exceedingly fear and quake. For ye are come unto Mount Zion, and unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels. To the general assembly and church of the firstborn, which are written in heaven, and to God the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect, and to Jesus the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaketh better things than that of Abel. See that ye refuse not him that speaketh, for if they escape not who refused him that spake on earth, much more shall not we escape, if we turn away from him that speaketh from heaven. His voice then shook the earth, but now he hath promised, saying, Yet once more I shake not the earth only, but also heaven. And this word, yet once more, signifieth the removing of those things that are shaken, as of things that are made, that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. Wherefore, we receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. For our God is a consuming fire. There's an eternal inheritance at stake here. So much more valuable even than what Esau forfeited. God is watching to see if there is in any of us a profane attitude. We notice that God's chastening is to help us to fulfill what He says in verse 28. Let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. God's chastening is to help us fulfill that. He said earlier that He chastens us that we might be partakers of His holiness. Well, partaking of His holiness is serving God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. They're pretty well speaking of the same thing. In verse 29, for our God is a consuming fire. Is that frightening or comforting? We usually think of fire as some just mindless fury that will consume. It will hurt whatever it can. But we should think of God a little bit different. God is not a mindless, all-consuming fire, but rather a fire focused on His holiness. It will burn anything that is not His holiness, and yet it will not in the least way harm His holiness. In other words, the only thing in your life that you've got to be concerned about being consumed by coming close to God is that which is not holy.
Right.
Any chastening that He brings into our life, you can rest assured that it's not to consume that which is holy.
Right.
It's a great aid to eradicate that which is not holy. Whether we are helped or destroyed by His chastening depends on what we value.
Right.
In Esau's situation, if he would have came in from the field faint at the point of collapse, he came up close to Jacob and, oh, Jacob, now have some pottage. And Jacob says, well, you may if you sell your birthright to me. I'll give you some pottage. If Esau would have stopped and thought about it, I'm being tested right now. I'm being tested to see what I value. And you know what? I don't know if I'm going to die today or not. But I value my birthright. No. No thanks. I'm feeling a lot better already. Just knowing that I realized what kind of a trap I just about fell into. He had a valuable opportunity to manifest an appreciation of God's program, God's salvation, God's plans. But he was too focused on the pain of the moment. Do you see where this is going? If we become too focused on the pain of the chastening and forget to view the fact that God is working, that we might be partakers of His holiness, we may become bitter and cast aside that which is our birthright. Because as children of God, our birthright is His holiness. To be a partaker of His holiness, and that will ultimately lead us to an eternity with Him. But God, in this day, wants to see how greatly we value being a partaker of His holiness. If He sees that we hold it dearly, even more important than the pain of the day, then He knows that He can bless us with an eternity with Him. Last year, I experienced what I would consider many trials. And, you know, one or two trials, that's okay. You can usually do fine with one or two trials. But it just seemed like as the year progressed, they just continued. And many of them were things that you don't just brush aside because there were things that continued to stare you in the face. And it was rather puzzling. It's kind of like Esau coming back from his hunt. It's like, I've tried everything I know, but I still couldn't get anything. And I got the feeling somewhat weary, because what's the point? What? Why is all these trials? And interestingly enough, many of them I've forgotten. But at the time, it was important. But why is all this happening? I think it was in the fall. Something dawned on me. You know, I've seen the same thing in other people. Where they have family members that are seeking the truth, they're going to be severely tested. And it's usually not just one or two things, but it's usually a sequence of events that leads to discouragement. It was a little bit like how Esau probably felt. But when I realized what was going on, it's like, okay. All right. We're going to go through this. Because I saw there's a reason for it. That was great. But God wants to take us beyond that, okay? Because there will be times in life when it will seem like things, so many things are against us, and we see maybe no progress being made anywhere as far as on this earth. Can we still see a reason for it? Because ultimately, the reason is that we may be a partaker of His holiness. Whether that changes any circumstances in life or not, it will definitely change how we respond to them. But chastening is for that purpose. And so that adds meaning to any time we receive chastening. This is not some just useless trial. This is a unique opportunity to grow. Let's not give in to the idea that somehow this chastening is for our destruction. The children of Israel manifest that in the wilderness. You know, they would come into a hard situation. It's like, well, you know, because there was no graves in Egypt, you brought us out here in the wilderness to kill us. Or, we're all going to die in the wilderness unless you make yourself altogether a lord over us. It's like, well, that would have been for your benefit if you would have treated Moses that way. God didn't bring you out in the wilderness to kill you, but that's what's going to end up happening if you're so stiff-necked. If you don't yield to His chastening. The goal is that we be a partaker of His holiness. We can be a partaker of His holiness now, in time, in this day. We should consider it a privilege that, and this is hard, when it's my responsibility to make a decision, that's my opportunity to experience the blessing of enforcing God's will in a situation or manifesting His mind in a matter. Do I value that? Partaker of His holiness in eternity? As if we value His holiness now, the natural culmination or the natural result of that is going to be an eternity with Him because He loves it. He loves His holiness, and those who manifest it, He wants to dwell with them. So my exhortation to all of us is to let us not grow weary and faint in our minds. As a child of the King, our birthright is His holiness. We will love it, or we will lose it. So, were things a lot easier this year? In some ways, yes. Because of a different perspective. And it's still a challenge to not grow bitter at whatever the trial is. But I get a little bit of a glimpse of this concept that this chastening, these hard things, are for a very special purpose. God doesn't take delight in causing people pain.
Right.
But He takes delight in seeing His image manifest in us. And if we take delight in seeing His image manifest in us, we can have joy even in the midst of hard trials. Because we can see it as an opportunity to perfect that which otherwise would be neglected.